Hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting unscripted episode of the Michael and Patty Show. Today, we have a ton of topics, which Patty and I are going to cover. And how are you on this beautiful Charlottetown waterfront day?
It is a beautiful September day. Nice temperatures are just coming down a little bit, but still blue skies and ships, all the little boats are starting to leave the harbor, which is kind of sad for another year, but beautiful, absolutely beautiful day.
Well, the nice thing about this time of the year is the humidity is non-existent, so you can actually see things in the distance crystal clear. Regardless of that, we're going to cover the statistics for August, the PEI real estate statistics, real quick. And then we're going to touch on a few other little subjects we've dug up over the last week in real estate here in PEI. So what's happened with the stats, Patty? Are they super exciting or super, super exciting for August?
August is pretty consistent this year, 2024, with August 2023. There's really been no changes to market values, the amount of properties that have sold, the type of market that we're in as well. So home sales, comparing last year to this year, 204 units sold last August, 216, pretty consistent. They do say it's up 5.9%, but really just a nothing percentage. The market, people always ask, what kind of market are we in? Because it helps them determine whether or not they price their properties a little high, or do they have to price them competitively? Currently, we are still in a balanced market, but they are saying that we're tilting a little towards this in favor of the sellers. So just something to keep in mind. You still want to price them competitively. Hopefully, that just means that you will have fewer days on market should you bring your property on the market at this time of year.
And what's the benchmark price? What can I expect to pay for a typical home in PEI?
Benchmark price for Prince Edward Island in August 2024 was $372,700. So that's approximately the average price of a residential property here. Still very affordable when you compare what the property values are across Canada. PEI is still one of the most cost-effective, affordable places to live.
And are we seeing any big increases in listings?
Listings, not really. They've been pretty consistent. That's unchanged from last year to this year. Same numbers, about 356 new listings come on the market in August. People trying to hopefully sell before the snow flies. Those who have done their move during the summer, usually because of children and school years and trying to time that. Now what people, there's a sense of urgency, and what they're planning on is getting their move done before the winter months, the snow flies.
Well, that's enough for this test.
Okay.
Done with that. Probably took too long.
That's okay.
We'll be half as amount of time next month. So one of the things I've come across, which is just shake my head, wondering if I'm living in an alternate universe, is people that are buying acreage, particularly waterfront acreage in Prince Edward Island. They're buying 20, 30, 40, 50 acres out in the boondocks, long way from Summerside or Charlottetown. They're paying $120,000 to $145,000 for this acreage, and then 2 or 3 years later they call me to list it, figuring now it's got to be worth $400,000, $600,000. And I just shake my head. I go through the exercise. Real estate school 101 always tells you don't list things that you don't think will ever sell. In PEI, one of the things about land is it's a very, very long road. And as I explained to these owners, vendors, a lot of agents don't want land because it's not exceptional to have a piece of land on the market for 1, 2, 3, 5, 10, 15 years. There's stuff I've seen. We're going into year 15 on the market, probably because they're overpriced like these people. But the solution is always increase the signage, because that's course automatically going to make your $135,000 piece of property worth $400,000 to $600,000 now. What do you say to these people?
Well, and yes, you know it's to do with the marketing. That's why you're not getting.
Well, it's always the agent's fault that you bought something for $130,000 and now you can't sell it for $600,000.
Yeah, and that actually brings up a good point. aside from properties that have been on the market for a long time, you want to make sure that your buyer's agent, your realtor, does what we call a reverse CMA to make sure you're not overpaying for a property. Because if you are overpaying and life circumstances change and now you want to flip it out and put it back onto the market, I know it is not a fun conversation to have with a client to say, I'm really sorry, but that property that we put under contract 3 years ago that you bought, you actually overpaid for it. But I was happy because I got a good commission check out of it. You just don't want that conversation to happen when you're in this business. So I am completely honest with my clients. I do reverse CMAs. I let them know, yes, this is market value for this property. Please know, though, this seller has had it on the market for 5 years before you showed up. Chances are, if you do want to flip this out without even inflating the price, it could take you 5 years to find you again. Some people assume because the residential property values have gone up, that automatically carries over to land values, which is why sometimes you're seeing the, you know, double the price, like you had said, Michael, 400% above their purchase price.
I didn't say 400%. I said 400 to 600,000 for something that they bought for 130 to 150, which is close to 400% plus or minus.
Yes. No, it's nothing to do with the sign. It's nothing to do with the property video. It's if it's overpriced, it's overpriced. Now, just again, because if you were Michael, my client, I would be saying, what's your motivation to sell? If it's price, please know, if it is way above market value, you and I are going to be in a long-term relationship, hopefully with a commitment, because it could take 5 years for that to sell. If your motivation is time, well, obviously the price is going to need to reflect that.
Well, what happened on this particular subject in closing is they indicated that their listing agent was at fault because they saw all these for sale signs all around their property that were all selling. Everything sold except for their property. It has to be the agent's fault. They were on for $400,000, paid $125,000 or so, hypothetically. And when I ran the stats, I said, all your neighbors sold for anywhere between $40,000 and $141,000, not $400,000. That's why this property remains on the market. So stop giving your agent a hard time, and you people that have land out in the boondocks, that it's going to take the agent 4 hours to drive to and back to put up another for sale sign. You're still $300,000 to $400,000 overpriced, and it's probably not going to sell. The other thing is, with on another subject, is it doesn't take long in Prince Edward Island to be in a price range that is illiquid. You know what I mean by that?
That you would be able to sell it in a reasonable amount of time?
The more expensive a property is, the longer it's going to take to sell, and it doesn't take long to get to that point. You know, with reference to our land subject or even houses, you get above $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 for a piece of land, there's not a lot of liquidity there. And same with houses, you get above a $700,000 or $800,000. There may be some sales, particularly in Charlottetown and Stratford, but out in the country, that bigger number is going to dictate the liquidity as well.
Yes, you don't have the larger buyer pool looking for products, say, in more of the rural areas, whether you're, you know, up west or down east. You do not have as high of a number of buyers who are looking, say, within 30 to 40 minutes of Charlottetown, 20 minutes to a half an hour maybe from Summerside. The buyer pool starts to diminish.
And when I hear something like, well, we bought 2 hours from town, so somebody else will, how do you even process that?
Well, they're correct. Someone else will, but it might take a long time. Again, gauge the previous listing. How long did it take to sell? Now, you may have just showed up on scene and it was timing for that particular seller. But a lot of cases, those properties have already been on the market for years. If you check the history of the property, I've seen properties that have been on the market since 2015, 2016, And now they're, you know, calling me up asking me to get them sold. They want them on ASAP. And there's this sense of urgency, whereas I just feel like you've been trying to sell this for almost 10 years now. Just relax. The buyers will present themselves.
But that's typical from any seller. They could be deciding to sell their property for 10 years or 5 years, but as soon as they decide, the listing paperwork, video and pictures and marketing has to be in place within 16 hours.
Yes, I know.
That is typical. Now, when we look at the sales data, if we're looking at a house that's, say, 15, 20 minutes out of town, and we try to draw some comparables, obviously the most direct comparables are those houses that are on the same street that have all transacted within the same month that are exactly the same. You're never going to find that in PEI typically. So what you do is you draw from a bigger base. If you're 15 minutes outside Charlottetown, say in the center of the island, you're looking at what we refer to as MLS Zone C, as in Charlie, and it reaches from Summerside to Charlottetown and everywhere in between. And that's where we'd probably draw our most direct comparables. But let's just say these properties are, comparatively speaking, anywhere between $6,000 and $9,999. Is that a product of emotional buyers, Patty?
Having a property between $6,000 and $900.
If we look at a three-bedroom bungalow with two bathrooms in Charlottetown for 30 or 40 years old, they're all in the same neighborhood. There's been 150 of them that have transacted within the last 3 years. We can come down to an evaluation based on market value, not my opinion, within $5,000 to $11,000 in my experience. We can't do that typically in the country because the houses are all different. In this particular case, it might be 7 acres on a stream with a in-law suite, a detached cottage, and a chicken coop with a barn.
That would be difficult to price.
Well, what I said to these people is I said, that would be very difficult to price.
Okay.
So what we ended up with is we ended up with a range that was about 300,000 wide, ranging from 700,000 to a million. So in that particular case, it doesn't matter how many mathematical geniuses or mathematicians look at the sales data. These people that have created the sales data have bought on emotion. And therefore, those prices are all over the place, unlike that three-bedroom bungalow in Charlottetown where people are buying on utility. How close is it to the schools, friends, family, shopping, and so forth? In this particular case, we have no alternative if you want the most amount of money but to do a reverse auction. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I would completely agree with that. As long as the motivation of the seller was not time. If it was price, 100%. If they had the time, do a reverse auction.
Yes, we also discussed that as well. Sorry, that's sort of a given. What's your motivation? Is it time or is it price? Is it grandma that's 92 years old that needs to be out in 4 days? Or are these people professional real estate investors, which they are, and they don't care if it takes 2 or 3 or 4 years to sell? So all you can do in this particular case, number one, don't harass your agent if you're getting into a 3 or 4 year business plan because it hasn't sold in 30 days. And number two, you're basically doing a reverse auction, hoping that the market actually goes up to that price range, if it ever does, because real estate values actually go down too, even though the public doesn't seem to believe that.
So could you explain to them what a reverse auction is?
What it is, Patty, and that's a very good question. It's like a normal auction, but it's reversed.
So what does that look like for a listing?
You're starting high and you're lowering the price based on showings, offers, interest.
And how often would you be looking at reducing the price?
Every 2 hours.
No.
Depends on the seller.
I've worked with you on many, many listings. So one way that we have in the past done reverse auctions on properties is we would list it and depending on, again, the timing of the seller.
Timing of the year, the season.
Year.
30 days is a good barometer.
That's what I was going to say. Sometimes you can do...
I got to change that to 27 days.
Okay. Well, if a seller does want to get it sold, say within the next 6 months to a year, say a year, just to be a little bit more relaxed about it all, yes, doing a price, and you can have scheduled price reductions that every 30 days, there's an amendment, the paper's paperwork's already in place, and you automatically just reduce the price by, I mean, it doesn't have to be a large amount until, and I mean, your agent would be able to determine the temperature of that listing. When the phone starts ringing consistently, I have in the past told my clients, I've called up my seller and said, we're getting some really good activity. We're not doing this month's price reduction. I don't feel we would need to. I don't know if you've done that, but I have done that and, you know, resulted in getting my clients the most amount of money.
I've done both. I've done situations where the husband and wife were in total disagreement on the price. There wasn't as much of a difference between market value and what the husband thought it was worth, where the wife just wanted to put it on for market. It might have been $50,000 on a $150,000 to $200,000 home. In that particular situation, we just automatically did $10,000 price reductions until it hit market. In this particular case, market was $145,000, but we actually ended up selling it at $154,000. And of course, the husband was really happy because we went through this stepping down procedure methodically and in a scheduled sense. But in most cases, when you're talking these massive gaps of 30% or whatever, yeah, it's probably better to have a discussion every 30 days, depending on what their timeline is.
Yeah, it also allows for great communication between the agent and the seller client, so that, because the sellers don't know, are you receiving any inquiries? Have agents been reaching out to you? Has there been any questions? What is the feedback from showings? Sellers don't know that unless their realtor communicates that to them. So it offers a great opportunity for conversation, discussion. And like I said, if I find there's some really good interest, then I might say, let's just pump the brakes and sit here for a little bit. Again, also depending on the season. Sometimes when you get this is part of my listing presentation, and I think it's part of yours as well, Michael. But if you're getting a bunch of showings and you're not getting any offers, it is indicative that your price is just a little high. So a price adjustment in that case could make the world a difference and end up resulting in a sale.
If that's what you want to do. When you list a property and it goes on market, assuming your marketing is in place, you've got great photos and video and great description and stuff that we've discussed, you're going to end up in one of three categories. Typically, you're going to end up in the crazy zone. That's that $150,000 piece of property going on for $600,000. You're going to get absolutely no inquiries, offers, or showings. The middle, I look, say, a professional real estate person, whereas you're putting it, say, 10 to 20% above ask. All you're concerned about is maxing out the price. I had one house that was vacant. We had 56 showings on, which for PEI is insane. But we also set the record for that whole area because we actually did find someone that fell in love with the property and it fit them 100%. So we ended up setting a record, but we had dozens of showings, which a lot of vendors don't want. If you're at market, if the market's saying your property is worth X and you put it on for X, you'll probably have showings, you'll probably have offers coming in. And if you're lucky, you'll even have multiple offers if you priced it aggressively.
Correct.
That's it.
No, I think that is good. So my question to you, Michael, is if a person wanted to overprice their property, this example that you're referring to, do you take that listing?
I don't turn down listings ever.
Why is that?
Because, you know, they have to go through a process. And if it's not with me, it will be the next agent or the next agent or the next agent. But eventually, if they have sense and they want to sell the property, some level of motivation there, they will get to the market. Or the market will get up to them. Probably the first option is probably more accurate than the market getting up to them, because a lot of times they just price themselves off the spectrum.
Okay. Something, though, that I was also thinking that maybe our listeners, the consumer, not if you're a realtor, because hopefully as a realtor you would know this, but another reason why a real estate agent would take a listing that's way overpriced is so that they have an opportunity to put their sign up and market themselves for that area, so they can actually get some serious sellers and maybe actually make a sale or two. So that's another reason why an agent would end up taking an overpriced listing, because it helps them.
Oh, there's absolutely been those agents in the past that look like they have a major equity or shareholding in some of the signage companies in town because it looks like they're running for some sort of political election. And if that's your marketing plan, that's great. It's probably a great marketing plan. It's going to cost you a fortune, considering every large sign's probably $2,000 plus installation. But, you know, if that's your marketing plan, go for it. But all you're doing is you're giving your agent some property, particularly if it's a high traffic area, to put his signage up, which with all real estate agents, we absolutely have to have our high school photo on that sign.
Yes, I just thought it was important, like full disclosure, you know, if you did take it, there's also another reason why a realtor would end up taking an overpriced listing.
For sure. The next subject is one of Petty's pet peeves and one of my pet peeves, watching Petty entertain these agents, which appear to be illiterate and can't read showing instructions. When you go to show a property, right on the MLS cut sheet, it says showing instructions. And what might that showing instruction say to that agent looking to show that house?
Yes. So there is a section that says showing instructions or instructions to members. And typically you're going to see one of two things. It's going to be contact the listing agent. If there's two listing agents that have co-listed, a lot of times one will be primary. Sometimes they'll put both names. So it's whoever you like is who you end up contacting to book the showing with. If you're working with our company, and I know I've mentioned this on previous episodes, we use a service called Showing Time so that my clients get to set the parameters for their showings. If they have medical appointments or anything like that and they don't want a showing on a particular day, they can just give me a call or shoot me off a text. I can block that day off so that they're not being bothered that day or being requested a showing for that particular day. So it sets the parameters. Showings could be from 2 o'clock until 6 o'clock, you know, Monday through Friday, different schedules, Saturday, Sunday, whatever the case may be. But it is all through Showing Time. It's real time. Having this conversation with you here today, Michael, I could be having messages sent to me trying to get into a property. Well, I'm obviously not available to be scheduling that showing. Showing Time goes ahead and does that for me. Agents don't seem to read, not all, but there are some that just don't read the showing instructions, and then they contact me to set up the showing.
That's because, for the most part, the showing instructions have been to text the listing agent. However, in addition to that, it may say things like showings only Monday to Friday, or only from 10 a.m. till 4 p.m., or in the case of a rental, and this is where I run into it a lot, is I'll get requests for showings on a Wednesday, yet the showing instructions clearly say, this is a weekly rental. You can get in Saturday or Sunday between 12 and 2 when they flip it, or they clean the cottage. So it's important from an agent's perspective to read the showing instructions and abide by them. And what about those agents that just don't want to learn technology and are forcing you to do their work on Showing Time because they don't know how to operate computers?
That's a sensitive, touchy. Some agents I have gone and just booked it because I don't want the back and forth. And at the end of the day, my focus and objective is to service the client. So if I have to, it gets my seller client a showing as well as the buyer. It's without the buyer realizing it, I'm just getting this done because at the end of the day, I want to see that property sell.
If I was an out-of-province buyer coming to PEI for 5 days to look at houses, do you feel it would be prudent for my agent, my buyer's agent, to share with me the showing instructions to indicate that we need to line some of these up in advance, or you can only see them on the weekends?
100%. As soon as I have, if it's me representing the buyer, and I have a buyer that says, I'm flying out next weekend to the island to look at some properties, I'm on the phone within the next 24 hours checking with every single agent, making sure they're available, asking them if they could keep me informed should they receive an offer, starting to put together my schedule. And then once I have my schedule all pinpointed down and our map laid out, then I will book those showings immediately so that I kind of got my foot in the door, no pun intended, to make sure that if an offer does come in, I am going to be first informed.
Plus, it would also indicate to the vendors of the property that there is someone that's taking the time, money, and energy to fly in from out of province to see your particular property. And to me, as a home seller, I would consider that more of a priority showing to someone that's potentially more interested in making an offer than someone that lives a quarter mile away.
Yes, and the other thing it does is, should that particular seller, you know, if they're not aware that this buyer is coming to take a look at their property and an offer comes in 3 days before and they decide, well, this is all I have, so we're just going to go ahead and entertain this offer, they may have missed out on a multiple offer situation.
And using that visitation or that showing as a leverage tool to get that other buyer up, knowing that someone's flying out of, in from out of province to specifically see their home.
Absolutely.
And 200 others.
Yes, sometimes.
Next, if I am selling my house, typically Patty and I will go through a whole list of what they need to do, what you need to do as the home seller. But what else should we supply to the potential buyers, either in a form of a letter or an email to our agent to forward on at close?
That's a really good question. And something that, so Powerhouse Realty, just saying my company's name.
Plug.
We have what's called a seller's guide, which one of the sections within our seller's guide is a list of professionals that we ask our sellers to put together, which has, you know, electricians, lawn care workers, who services the boiler or the furnace or the heat pumps. That information becomes invaluable so that the new owners hopefully now don't have to sit there and start from scratch. They also, it would save them costs and expense because there could have already been a professional that is familiar with a particular, whatever the system is or service within the property, and they'd be able to come in and diagnose it a lot quicker than starting scratch from with somebody brand new.
Absolutely. In one of my MLS descriptions, it was a large piece of waterfront property, and in there I put not identified for none development. And the purchaser, which was in British Columbia, talked to his agent, which was a new agent, and asked them, does this mean we don't have to go through the IRAC application process?
That does not mean that.
What does it mean?
It means that the property, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Michael, however, a non-island resident had purchased this property. It has gone through IRAC at some point, and they have identified it that it is not allowed to be subdivided or developed for a period of time. And a lot of times what you'll see is 10 or 15 years.
10 years.
10 years. That is what an identified property means. And if it's non-identified, it just means that it hasn't gone through that process. So there's a little bit of flexibility or freedom for development potential. Not saying that it can be, but potential. But the buyer still has to go through IRAC if it exceeds the 5 acres and 165 feet of frontage.
Absolutely. So when you go to buy a property in PEI as a non-resident, whether you're Canadian or American, this is not a bias towards American buyers, and it's over 165 feet of water frontage or 5 acres of property on an accumulative basis, in that if you did have prior purchases, those would apply to that restriction as well, or that limitation. You have to go through an application process, which we've covered in previous podcasts, where you pay a 1% application fee, and IRAC will, in most cases, approve the purchase. However, there is a caveat in that they will restrict its use in as much that you just can't go buy 50 acres and chop it into 50 lots and then sell them all off. They're typically going to identify it, is what they call it, for non-development. They'll usually allow you to put a single family dwelling there and an outbuilding, but that's the extent of it. You can apply to have this removed, but it typically isn't removed until 10 years pass by. So if you're buying a property that's not identified, one of the things you can do before doing your IRAC application is do all the development under the vendor's name and then convey it through IRAC. But that's a pretty dicey situation. A lot of vendors are not going to agree with that unless there's a major monetary upside.
That would be something I would be suggesting between the province, their lawyer. I stay out of that.
I would stay out of that as well. But that's what identification means. Be aware of it. And how can I find out if a property is identified without having to ask an agent?
They could call the province.
No.
IRAC? They could just give IRAC a call?
All you need to do is go to irac.pe.ca, click on the icon, I think is the third one from the left that says Land Protection. Go to the next screen. It will say LPA Database. You're going to type in the property ID number, which is a series of numbers between typically 3 and 8 digits. And that will give you the whole history of that property, including if there was any applications, what the results were, and if they were identified as a result.
Okay. I've never gone, I guess, just because I have access to the Geolink site on the island, I've always gone to the deed, seen what's registered with the deed.
Well, that's a very long, convoluted way to do things.
It's the right way to
do the right way is just type in the PID number. It will show you the results. It will show you a map of the property. It will do it a lot faster than me searching through what Patty is referring to, which is the deed, which has all the stuff registered to that PID number, which I would have to manually go through and manually read. And is this, you know, identification? Is it not an identification? Whereas I can just go to the database, type the number in, Bob's my uncle, and I'm done.
Okay, so my question to you on that is, does it tell you how, when it was identified and how long?
Tells me everything and even gives me a pretty little picture of the property. It's beautiful. Some of them are so nice, I'll print them out and put them in my office.
Look, I learned something new today.
I learn something new every day.
Awesome.
I appreciate everybody listening to our podcast. If you'd like to hear more of this silliness, you can certainly subscribe or follow the show. Give us a star rating. Give us some feedback. That would be greatly appreciated so we know that people are actually out there listening. And everybody, have a great day.
Have a great day.
And that's it. It's a wrap.